Oh, it's great to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart.
And I'm Natasha Moore.
What's worth mentioning today, we'll be talking about some topics that are not suitable for young children. Now, if you have kids in the car or perhaps listening at home, it'd be best to turn off now and catch up with the podcast later on. Well, prostitution is a global industry that generates more than $186 billion worldwide and has more than 13 million so-called employees. But these numbers don't tell about who these people are, what led them to a life of prostitution, what they experience in the industry, and the struggle to leave.
Prostitution Narratives is a new book that's aiming to change this. It's telling the stories of women who have escaped the prostitution industry. It's edited by author and advocate for women and girls, Melinda Tankard-Reist, and RMIT lecturer, Dr. Caroline Norma. Melinda joins us today to talk about the book and why it's important to hear the voices of women from within the prostitution industry to understand why sex work isn't just like any other work, as those arguing for the legalisation of prostitution might want us to believe. Melinda, thanks for coming in.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So you've long been a fearless advocate for women and girls, taking on the likes of the pornography industry, the advertising industry for the sexualization of girls. What was it that called your attention to the prostitution industry and the need to write this book?
Well, we hear a lot of spin, really, from the global sex industry that prostitution is work, it's a job like any other, it should be acknowledged as that it's not harmful, that women can have a great life in the industry, they can make lots of money, that it's glamorous, they can travel and meet interesting men. And we knew that that wasn't true. We knew that there were survivors starting to form survivor groups internationally, and we felt that it wasn't fair that we were only hearing one narrative, one discourse, mostly promulgated by those with vested interests in keeping the business as usual. And so we wanted to provide a platform to women that don't usually get heard in the mainstream. And so we put out this call for stories and we were flooded with accounts.
So you've been listening to quite a few of these stories. What is it that's stuck with you as you've heard story after story of these people's experiences?
The strength of these women, their ability to survive, their willingness to come out with their stories, the fact they're still alive for many of them is extraordinary. There were four main themes that came out of the book. One was the lack of choice for so many women that ended up in prostitution. Many of them were coming from backgrounds of child sexual abuse, of marginalisation, of inequality, poverty, disadvantage. They were often recruited because of those things. They were easy prey. Many of them began as children. The violence within the industry was quite shocking, what women endured, and the lack of exit programs, the lack of opportunity to get out. So often they're dragged back into the industry because of money. They aren't offered anything else, retraining or education, or support, housing. Often if they're single mothers, there's not enough support for them and their children. It's just too easy for them to go back into the industry.
What was impossible to miss as you read these accounts was the prevalence of sexual abuse experienced by these women earlier in their lives. Does that experience seem to predispose women to ending up in this type of industry?
Well, child sexual abuse and incest has been described as the boot camp for prostitution, the training ground for prostitution. Some stats say that around 95% of women in the industry suffered sexual abuse as a child. And what a tragedy. One of the young women in the book, Charlotte, was first used, trafficked by her family at the age of five. And often they think that's all they're good for, and that's where they find, you know, this sort of weird affirmation. It's really the only praise they've ever got for how they act sexually, how they perform sexually, what they provide sexually.
That becomes who they are.
Becomes their identity. They don't have good people in their lives. They don't get affirmation from other places. And it ends up in this vicious cycle. And that came out very strongly was the prevalence of sexual abuse, which was really a form of recruitment into a life into the industry.
Mm. Now, some of the arguments for decriminalisation of prostitution include that prostitution is a victimless crime. that consenting adults cause no harm to each other or that it's a career choice. Now, are women entering into these things willingly? The picture you're painting suggests something other than that.
Well, certainly for the women in our book, choice is just a myth. Choice is a misnomer. What does choice mean when you have so few other options, and this whole idea of prostitution being a legitimate career, so-called choice, is just so offensive. Like, I just, even when I hear this language, it's so offensive to these women that have survived, you know, one of the gravest human rights violations, having to sell their bodies, being traded, having to provide sexual so-called services that they despise and loathe and hate, having to disassociate to survive.
It struck me that as you talk about the abuse that's so prevalent, that we're effectively taking people who are deeply traumatised and damaged and throwing them into an industry that just further embeds all that trauma that they've experienced already.
Exactly. It's layers and layers and layers of trauma upon trauma and more trauma. Is it any wonder that they can't get out? And then, you know, Australia, we don't even provide exit programs to help these women. We're signatories to a global international protocol known as the Palermo Protocol that says we will provide measures to help women to exit, and we don't do it. And yet, our government gives hundreds of thousands of dollars to the Scarlet Alliance to, quote unquote, fight trafficking. And Scarlet Alliance, which is the umbrella body for the sex industry, says there is no trafficking in Australia. And yet our government, just in the last budget, has given them another massive allocation to fight trafficking. It's just an absolute scandal. And yet where is the money for exit programs to help women to get out? And this is why the law that's just recently been passed in France is so magnificent, because not only does it say this is beneath your dignity, this is beneath your humanity, we want to provide something else for you. France, as part of the passage of what we call the Nordic model of regulation, has said we will provide every measure you need to help you to do something else. You know, it's just the language around it is so beautiful. It's just a work of art, really. Not only will we condemn this as a human rights violation inconsistent with human dignity and flourishing, but we will provide you what you need.
The means to get out.
The means to get out, which is what women want.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Melinda Tankard-Reist is with us today. She's the co-editor of the new book, Prostitution Narratives. This is a compilation of first-hand accounts from 20 women who have survived working in the sex industry.
Where are we with this issue legally? Different countries are dealing with this in different ways. What is it that you're arguing for here in Australia?
Well, we are part of a global coalition calling for implementation of the Nordic model. This is a model that has been now taken up in a number of countries, most recently in France. And the Nordic model criminalises the buyer of women, but it doesn't criminalise the woman. It says that the woman is a victim. Imprisoning her is not going to solve the problem. We have to address demand, the global demand for the bodies of millions of women and girls. That's what we need to address. Now, we have a state-by-state situation in Australia. It's different in every state. One state that we can look at to see whether decriminalisation / legalisation has worked or not is Victoria. So in Victoria, all these claims were made that if we decriminalise, there'll be less crime, there'll be less violence, there'll be less drugs, there'll be less illegal brothels. All of those things have not been delivered. In fact, the opposite has happened. And more women are being prostituted. There's more violence. There's more drugs. It hasn't cut down on illegal brothels. In fact, often it's the owners of the legal brothels that own the illegal ones as well. It hasn't cut down on trafficking. So it's a total myth that this will solve the problem. Unfortunately, governments are beholden. They're making money from the industry through taxes and licensing fees, and they're also often beholden for other reasons, because they know that the industry has actually threatened to, you know, make the names of politicians known. So it's just very hard to get any movement or any traction.
An issue that government is more and more concerned about is domestic violence, violence against women generally. The theme of violence comes up repeatedly as you talk about this issue. What's the link between violence against women generally and domestically and prostitution?
Well, all these things are a continuum, really, aren't they? Men who are violent to women are going to be violent to women. And often it's women in the sex industry that are vulnerable. They're already vulnerable. In fact, we have a whole chapter in the book written just about the men who use women. So look, all these things are interconnected. A society that allows this to happen isn't a society that really cares about violence against women. You know, if you read the stories of the women, if I may, Autumn Burris from California, who's now the director of Survivors for Solutions, shares her chapter in our book called No Life for a Human Being, in which she explains how being a prostituted woman exposes women to violent attacks. She says, when a sex buyer rents your body, he often demands more of you than agreed. If you reject him, more often than not, violence ensues. Upon entering prostitution, it is immediately clear that there is no such thing as respect for human rights or physical boundaries. As soon as a client buys power over you, Jade from New Zealand said, there's no how-to when learning to be a prostitute. I was at the mercy of the clients. I would be left with bruises all over my body from the rough sex. Men always wanted to imitate hardcore porn, acting out the sexual violence they were feeding on. The drunker they were, the angrier they would get, until they were in hateful rages. Mary Lucille Sullivan wrote the book Making Sex Work about the failure of legalization in Victoria, and she argues that some of the techniques that pro-sex work groups recommend to mitigate the everyday violence of prostitution sound like, quote, crisis management in hostage situations.
Melinda, how do we know that the kinds of stories that these women tell, that those stories are typical of the industry and they're not just, you know, these people have bad experiences, but the norm is something quite different? That's what the sex industry kind of claims.
We know it's not the case, not only because of the women that have spoken out in this book and that are speaking out globally in new survivor movements that are forming around the world. There's very solid research now around women's experiences and describes the rates of post-traumatic stress disorder, disassociation, anxiety, depression, drug and alcohol abuse, the multi-levels of complex trauma suffered by women in the industry. This has been documented in research studies around the world.
Melinda, do people that you've talked to and people who have told their stories ever speak about a spiritual element to this or damage associated with this sort of traumatic experience? I remember hearing a prostitute say once that they take a piece of your soul every time.
Yes, a number of the women did reflect on this. They talked about the effect on their bodies physically. They talked about the effect on them mentally and emotionally. And a number of them talk about the spiritual devastation. Something at the deepest core of their being was being violated. And many of them that have come out of the industry have sought some kind of consolation, some kind of spiritual healing. Some have found it in Christian faith. Some have sought it in Buddhism. One of the very beautiful things that's come out of the book, and you know, God knows we need to find some, is that these women, you could just see it happening where they realized that this was beyond their own personal experience. They were part of a global movement of women against prostitution, and you could see them find that sort of love and support in each other, that they weren't so isolated, they weren't so alone. And it's just been wonderful to see. And that also they've become politically active. You know, they would never have thought they'd be able to do this.
So it's an amazing experience to even touch on some of these stories. It's worth saying that it's pretty heavy going, Melinda, but there is a redemptive element to this in the sense that these women got out, and the way you're describing the sort of solidarity, the way they're coming to life in some of these experiences is really, truly brilliant. And, you know, we're very sympathetic to the idea of giving voice to the voiceless people. You've certainly done that with this book, and we're very grateful to you.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much for your interest in the book.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Prostitution Narratives is edited by our guest today, Melinda Tankard-Reist and Caroline Norma, and it's available for purchase now.
We're always grateful to have people like Melinda on our show to speak plainly and passionately about issues that are hard to talk about but very important. We'd love to hear what you think. Feel free to leave us a rating or review on iTunes. Just type Centre for Public Christianity in the search box to find us.
Next week, is Europe still Christian? Join us then.